Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick with you this morning. And wow, do we have a jam-packed show. We're going to try our very best to get to every single earnings report that gets thrown our way between Apple and AMD and eBay and Bob and McDonald's, GD, so many, Boeing. Can't even just throw them all right now, so we'll get to as many as we can. Plus, we have two guests on the schedule for today's show. First up at 8:35, we're going to be talking to Michael Hewson from across the pond. He is the chief market analyst at CMC Markets, going to give us the lowdown on Brexit. And then at 8:50, we'll be joined by Mike Olson, managing director and senior research analyst at Piper Jaffray. He covers Apple for them, so he'll talk to us about Apple. That'll be 8:50. Joel, what's the word here in the overnight session? The S&Ps.
We got some major green on the screen. Thanks to Apple here, trading up nearly 8 sticks. The spoos are up 12 handles. Your pre-market highs, 55 and a quarter. Not much up there, folks. I'm looking for Monday's high, 63.50, upside target. Coming on the downside, you had a double close at the 42 area, so that's your support. Pre-market low, a good 16 handles away at 26.36 and a quarter. Maybe we'll talk some crude here with Triple D when he comes on, bunching up at the $54 area. We've been into a 52 to 54 range since we bolted out of the $40 handle. So keeping an eye on 54.32, that's the high of the move. Current high, 54 even. Gold continues to distance itself from 1,300 up $1.20 at 1,316.40. But silver is not able to crack $16, trading up 6 cents at 1,590. We don't even get Bitcoin anymore. Dennis, do you have any exotic hedges
on in the market? What's Bitcoin at? I want to know what Bitcoin is. I haven't looked at that in months. Where's Bitcoin?
Let's go to the Bitcoin futures. 34 and a quarter is where the Bitcoin futures are. So 3,400, a bunch
what's
of lower
the low of the move? How, what is the low of like the recent move? Like, did it ever get 2,900s? Did it get under 3,000?
Nope. No, the low of the move I have on the futures is 32.32.
So we're not too far away from it.
Nope.
Anyways, we're still Bitcoin bears on the show. Sorry, Bitcoin bulls, but we've hated it forever. We'll continue to, I guess, hate on it. All the other crypto, don't like any of them. Although we did have, obviously, our guest there, Jim Angel, was liking Ether. So, and I really respect his opinion. So if there was anyone that I would like, it would be Ether, but I don't like any of them.
All right. Maybe we'll pull that chart up maybe next week. We'll take a look at that one because we got a lot to cover here. Earnings bonanza here. Yeah. I guess when you lower expectations, then it's easier to beat them, right? Is that the case with Apple?
I mean, that's the case with all the stocks here. Let's go to Apple. Let's give the numbers here. This was not a good report, but doesn't matter because we already knew it wasn't going to be a good report because they warned, remember, on the second trading day of the year. So lower expectations. They beat the lower expectations. Good enough. Spencer Israel, what do they say?
Yeah, I guess so. Q1 EPS for Apple here, $4.18 versus a 4.17 estimate. Sales, 84.3 versus $84.04 billion. So slightest of beats there on the Q1 as far as individual segments. Remember, they don't break it down by sales anymore. Unit sales, they just break it down. Or they don't break it down by units. They break it down by unit revenue. So Q1 sales in the Americas came in pretty much in line with estimates. iPhone sales, we know they said they're going to be weak. They were $51 billion versus $61 billion in the same quarter last year. Q1 services revenue, it's a big deal. We've talked about Apple and services becoming a bigger part of the company. $10.8 billion versus $9 billion in the same quarter last year. Overall gross margins, slightly lower on a year-over-year basis, $32 versus $33 billion. They said China would be weak. It was. They said iPhones would be weak. They were. And then the Q2 guidance that they gave, the sales guidance, 55 to $59 billion was the range they provided. The estimate was all the way at just below 59, so at the very high end of the range that they gave in their guidance. And it all comes down to Apple trading up.
Some people complain about the feed. If it's a little bit choppy, try refresh. It was working on my end, so I'm not sure that is everyone or if it's just a couple people there. But just try refreshing your feed if it is coming through choppy. It was working on our end. We haven't had gremlins for a long time, so hopefully they're not going to come back here. We don't need any gremlins. Joel, talk about this after-hours action. Woo! Got initially hit very quickly, almost identical to AMD, which we're going to get to in a second. What'd the initial spike down take us to?
151.
Wow. Yeah. And you know what? It's just a matter of what we said with Fari Hamzy. If you go back to the Fari Hamzy interview from last week, Fari and I thought, and I asked him specifically, I said, is all the bad news baked in? And Fari said, yeah, I think it is. So that's exactly what happened. So Fari, if you're listening, good call. All the bad news was baked in. Stock is trading up. Now, that being said, it's starting to leak a little bit here just in the last 20 minutes or so. We've been actively trading the 163s. We're now trading the 161 handle here. So we are leaking a bit here on Apple. And I don't think this is going to be like blast off into orbit. Lots of people underwater. It's a big move. The results were okay considering the lower expectations, but they still were not great results here. And, you know, the stock is getting a nice lift, but that being said, I'd just be cautious if I'm chasing it here today.
Yeah, I'll give you your pre-market high, after hours high, before Dennis corrects me, 164.85. And that's finally where the sellers overtook the buyers because they were just punishing them through the 157, 158, 159, 160, 161. There's your pre-market high. You got the fade. Kind of got a feeling the high of the day may be in an Apple. If you get up near that area, we got nothing at 165. So there just must be a big seller there. If it gets through there and you want a little bit more of a target, there's a double top at 167.5. So that would really be nice for the longs. Of course, everyone, I don't have my options platform in here, but not sure how much premium they baked in here, but I bet you, you know, if you have the 156s, 157s, 158s, 150, you know, all those you can lock in some profits here in the market. The longer it takes to get up over 165, I look for a slow fade here. Have no idea where support is.
QQQ is getting a nice lift on this. Let's go look under the hood here for a second. I just want to explain the R behind it. Apple's almost 10%. It's 9.13%. Microsoft, 9.79%. Amazon's 9.66%. So just taking just Apple, you can go, it's up 4.6%. The QQQ right now is up 0.9%. So basically half of the QQQ gain is Apple. So if you're just looking at it from that perspective, and then you got to look, Amazon's up 1.77%. Microsoft's up more. So you're seeing obviously the big tech rally, which you would expect, you know, when Apple's trading up that much. So that being said is, you know, when you've got this many stocks trading up substantially and all the major components are up more than the index itself, that means the stocks that are lower components in the index are going to be relatively weak or potentially even be down. So think about the non-tech stuff. We've talked about this before, but the non-techs that are in the QQQ, and there's non-techs like Pepsi is in the QQQ. Unbelievable that it's in the QQQ, but it is. That's a stock that could potentially be weak or go down today just because Apple is up. Costco is another one that's in the QQQ. Also, Walgreens Boots. If you look in the pre-market, already trading down here. I'm short WBA, full disclosure, just as a day trade, just because I believe that it will probably go down because it's in the QQQ and it's non-tech. It's funny how, you know, these ETFs control everything, but they really do, guys. I mean, you can talk technicals, you can talk whatever you want. What really controls day-to-day day trading activity is ETF action. So many ETFs, so traded, so liquid, and it's just all arbitrage going back and forth all the time. So when you see big moves like this in Apple, other stocks in the index have to make up for it. All add up. I mean, the 100 components have to add up at the end of the day. And when Apple's up 4.66% and the QQQ is only up 0.92%, and you just start going through, you've got to say, oh, well, some of this non-tech stuff has to probably be down today. So, you know, if you're told, you know, the KHC CEO that stock could likely be down here today, Kraft Heinz, because Apple is up, they'd scratch their head and say, why? Well, that makes zero sense at all. From a fundamental perspective, it does make zero sense at all. But from an arbitrage perspective, it makes all the sense. KHC probably going to be weak too.
Dennis, go ahead, Spencer. Yeah, Dennis, with regard, there are a lot of non-tech earnings in the QQQ. Are they all created equal in your eyes, or do you go by the weighting? So, for example, are you more inclined to short Walgreens Boots, which is 0.9%?
That's a good question. Yes.
Ooh, Spencer.
Because like,
that's a great question. JB Hunt. Right. And I pick on them the same way. I mean, I will short non-tech QQQ. I will short because it's all got to add up. So the arbitrage says those stocks could potentially go down. Now, remember, we're getting some help from a couple of the biotechs, which we'll get to in a second, because Amgen had a rough quarter. Amgen's trading down 2.3%. So that's going to help to make up for it a little bit. You've also got a lot of the biotechs themselves are probably going to be in the red. I would imagine, you know, Biogen, we already saw this morning, it's trading significantly down. I'd imagine Gilead is going to be a prime candidate to go down. It is trading down already, if I look at it now, already down 30 cents. So you're scratching your head on some of these stocks, why they're trading down. That's why, because they're components of the QQQ. And yeah, if it's a non-tech component, it's a bigger component, it'll get picked on more. That's a great question, Spencer, and you're absolutely correct.
So like Walgreens Boots more than JB Hunt, which is 0.16% of the QQQ.
100%. I completely agree with that. And that's why you're already seeing Walgreens Boots trade in the red here today. You know, you think the market's way up. Why is Walgreens down? Walgreens is down because it's in the QQQ. That sounds silly, but that's the truth.
You don't have to understand it.
Anybody who says they don't, they do. They mess with it. Walgreens Boots could have a little bit. And it can reverse. I mean, if Apple starts giving back its gains, which it is right now, and you see a lot of the tech start to roll over, then those other stocks can get a lift. That's why a lot of times you see, they call it rotation. Sometimes it's just rotation within the index itself. So, you know, funny things happen, but a lot of these stocks will tend to track other ways or move, you know, in the opposite direction of each other. Because, you know, I don't understand why, like, Walgreens Boots is part of the QQQ. You think QQQ, you think tech, but there's a lot of non-tech in there. So I guess this is how they made it up.
A good question from Ed Seeking Missile here. Triple D, is there someone sitting there, that holds the Q long fund and saying, okay, I have to sell WBA because Apple is up more than index? Do you think that,
it's all algo.
Okay.
So there's no human being. I'm probably the only human being trying to like actually analyze it from that perspective. But I just understand because I'm primarily still a point and click trader. I need to understand these relationships. As a short-term trader, I might be like, oh, I like the W. Imagine you're just a technical trader. Imagine you only trade charts and that's it. Well, you would say, maybe in this case, maybe for whatever reason, you look at WBA and you're like, oh, it's consolidating. We're getting a nice lift in the market. I think I'm going to buy Walgreens today. If I was only a technical trader, maybe, you know, I'm not giving that argument that it is or it isn't. I'm just saying in some cases, technicals might line up really well. But if the arbitrage is going the other way, you're going to lose on that trade. The arbitrage will win every single time. So Walgreens Boots trading in the red here today because it's in the QQQ. I don't care what the chart looks like. That's why I really believe, you know, by listening to our show, you understand more and you won't be such a one trick pony. If you're just trading charts and you know, if you just trade charts, that's all you look at and you do well at it, continue to do it. But what I will say is it's very difficult in the long run, I believe, to, you know, make money consistently when you're only a one trick pony. So we've had a lot of technical traders. Me and you are technical traders, Joe. We respect the technicals, but I think you have to have more tricks in your bag. And I use charts, but I use I would weigh arbitrage way more than charts. So, you know, that's why on a WBA, I don't care what the chart looks like today. I think it's going to be initially weak. Now, if Apple starts to roll over and tech starts to roll over, WBA could potentially catch a bit. But if Apple blasts off and all the techs continue to blast off, then WBA is going to be weak. So think about WBA moving opposite to Apple today. Messed up, but true.
We've come a long way from just being tape readers, you know. I mean, it's, you know, we've learned to, not, you know, that edge has gone away from the tape. But I'll just tell you, you know, working with you, Dennis, understanding these relationships when you have positions on and they're just not going, you know, there's reasons for it. And they're they're not apparent, you know, in your P&L. But, you know, the news, the ratings. I mean, you know, you might think all the analysts are FOS, but you know what? They move stocks. You can't ignore what that guy, I don't know what firm it was, in Square yesterday.
No, that was unbelievable. That shows you the influence. It was Raymond James. And that shows you the influence there. And you have to respect that because if you're looking at Square, and even Jeremy Newsom was saying yesterday in his chat room, We were looking at Square as a potential long, but all of a sudden it gets a downgrade. Everything changes. Fundamental information changes everything. Fundies trump technicals every single time. People hate it when I say that. You know, and the technicals still, then so now you have the event and now you do the new technicals. But if you're still basing your, you know, analysis on old technicals, the technicals from yesterday and what the chart looks like, and you're not including the new fundamental information, then you're done. I don't care how good the chart looks like. When Boeing comes out today and blows it away, stock's going up. I don't care how bad, even if it looked bad, it actually looked good going into it. But, you know, in some cases, sometimes they look bad going into it. We've seen that before. They blow it away, it's going to go up. So it's, you know.
Can you talk about your Square trade from yesterday, if you remember it?
Yeah. So, and this is going back to discipline here too. And I guess, you know, we're doing some education. You think you're going to have an earnings show, but sometimes it's good to go on tangents, do some education, have some fun. I mean, people can go read the news themselves sometimes too. So we don't want to be too newsy, but you know, Square yesterday. So I'm looking at it. It was a significant move. It was going to open weak. I was like, well, we saw Nvidia the day before open on bad news and kind of get a good rally. Very early in the trade. It actually had a little wash on, then had a good rally. I was anticipating maybe Square doing the same thing. It did not. I got in the trade. So I bought the open. I was down immediately in the trade. So then I'm in full damage control. I'm like, okay, I need to get out of this as best I can because I'm wrong. I thought it might open a little bit, you know, too low, and then the buy the dippers might come in right away. They did not. So anyways, I was able to get out and wiggle out with a 35 or 40 cent loss, which was a great loss. I mean, that feels like a winning trade almost, because when I look at, you know, from where it opened to where it closed, it was down 4 points. So you got to identify quickly when you're on the wrong side of the trade and be able to either reverse it or just, you know, get out and not have the loser. I talked about my hog trade yesterday too. I think so much people don't talk about their losers. They you see on Twitter, and it seems like everybody wins. All they want to talk about is how much they make on this trade. Or, yeah, but I made this or this. I feel like you guys learn so much more from the losers, because this is like, you know, if I explain this on the show what I did wrong, you guys can learn from that. Not only I learned from that, you guys can learn from that too. So this is why it's very important to talk about your losers. And if you're following somebody that only talks about their winners, I'm going to tell you to follow somebody else. Because you need to learn, you know, how to, you know, what to do in the case that the trade doesn't work out for you. It's more important, you know, to limit what you lose on trades than to maximize what you make. It's all about discipline. Yes, you want to maximize what you make in every case, but cutting those losers, that's the number one thing in day trading, is cut those losers as quickly as you can. So that's why we like, you know, people like Jeremy Newsom. He outlines a trade right before he gets in. This is where I'm going to stop out. We were in that chat with him yesterday. He got stopped out in NVIDIA, you know, and it ended up, it would have worked out in his favor, but he got stopped out. He's willing to admit when he's wrong. Traders that hold on and hoping it's going to come back, yes, a lot of times they do, but the time that it doesn't, it can, you know, really do damage to your trading account. Psychological damage and physical damage as your P&L starts to drop. It's very important to cut those losers as quickly as you can. And I think it's important to discuss your losers and learn from them. Don't let it affect your trade, and try not to let it affect you. Just move on. But again, analyze it and learn from it. I always think when I get a big loser, it's like, you know, paying a little bit of, you know, to my college trading education here, if you will. You know, you're just paying that fund. Like yesterday, I got hit hard in Dover, DOV. You know what I did wrong? I didn't realize it reported. I missed it. I actually write down. So this is my exercise, and earnings season gets difficult. So I write down all the major companies that are reporting. Sometimes I missed. Dover's a pretty major one too. For whatever reason, I missed it. It was in the calendar. I missed it. And anyways, I was doing some ARB the night before with that, and I got short it. And then I'm like, oh my goodness. And it's up 5 points on me. I was like, it reported. I was short it. Usually I don't trade those stocks, but I missed it. So education for me was double check that list a little bit better. So yesterday when I was writing my list, I was very careful writing the list. You get sloppy every once in a while, but you need to know the company's reporting, especially if you're doing stuff like arbitrage, because fundamental information doesn't matter at all. You know, on like Boeing isn't going to care about, you know, the ARB or whatever. It's trading up because of that good earnings. You got to know that stuff.
And Dennis, you're going to go over your trades again today, like around 10, 9:45 or 10 today, just kind of what you saw off the open.
Jeremy Newsom's room. Yeah, I mean, we've been doing that. I've been talking about, you know, what I did right, what I did wrong. I've done a few things wrong here today already. It's one of those days. You know, it's funny. You know, you do some things right, you do some things wrong. It's what trading's all about. And I just say at the end of the day, You know, and the one thing, and this is why I'm very consistent in, you know, I make money most days, is because I'm employing so many different trades. Like right now, it's a light day for me. I have 25 positions on day trading overnight. And I'll probably have more at the open, and I'll try to wiggle out of these. That's a small, but as you, if you have a statistical edge, it's like the casino of like 52%. And, you know, my edge might not be much better. Maybe it's 52, maybe it's 53. I've never been able to figure it out. I never cared to figure it out. You know, but, you know, maybe you could if you really, you know, started and wanted to really analyze the hell out of your trading. I'm not that, you know, meticulous here that I need to know that information. I know I've got an edge because I'm profitable every year for 19 years. So I know I've got, and I've, a lot of the same strategies employing all the time. So I know I have some type of edge. I don't know what that is. But let's just say, you know, for fun's sake, it's 53%. So that means in 47% of cases, I'm going to be wrong. So I need to figure out how to limit the damage in those situations that I'm wrong. I'm wrong today. I'm short Boeing today. So it was trading up $5. I thought a lot of stuff might be baked in. I'm short Boeing. But you know what? I was long. I went heavy long XLI last night because it's 10% of the component. So I know I'll make up some of it in the XLI. So it wasn't like a straight out short. I'm sure, you know, an XLI is like, Boeing's like the second biggest component in the XLI. DIA too. If you're trading DIA today, it's going to be up more than the Qs because it's 10% Boeing. So, you know, it's a little bit of, you know, the arbitrage between the index, but I was a little too heavy on the Boeing short because I thought, you know, it's been running up, you know, and yes, it was up five, and it gave me a 5-point lead last night. It was trading up 5 points ahead of the report. So I was trying to, you know, extract that 5-point alpha from people, you know, who are speculating that it's going up. And trying to, you know, cover it with the XLI. I didn't cover it well enough because I didn't go long enough XLI. But it, the XLI is going to help me. So it's, you know, it's funny things, you know. So you can lose 20 points on something, but you know, I've got some, you know, XLI. It's going to help. So at the end of the day, we employ all these things. You know, at the end of the day, you just hope you're trading green.
All right. Yeah. Let's get back. It's funny, Dennis.
That was a good one, Daddy.
Take a breath.
Guys, in chat, let us know what you like to talk about, because I think sometimes when we go on these tangents, and I know I don't want to take up all the screen time from Joel and Spencer here, but I think, you know, sometimes when we go on these tangents, I feel like it's better than just, you know, spitting out numbers on the earnings.
Yeah, but sure.
Let me know what you guys like. You know, a lot of times in the earnings season, people want to know the earnings. They want to know, you know, what's moving. They want our analysis of the big movers. So we try to cover them all. But sometimes, you know, you go on tangents and you learn some stuff.
Hey, it is what it is. Boeing Q4 EPS this morning, $5.48 versus a $4.58 estimate. So a beat there. Sales 28.3 versus 26.97. So a beat there as well. Nice Q4. For Boeing, nice, the fiscal year EPS guidance that they gave was higher than estimates nicely. $19.90 to a $20.10 range is what they gave. $18 was the estimate there on the fiscal year EPS guidance. Sales guidance for the fiscal year, $109 to $111 billion. $106 was the estimate. So beats across the board for Boeing.
So, Joel, tell me how to minimize my damage in Boeing. I'll throw this to you. I'm short a small position in Boeing, long a much bigger position XLI, but not 10-1. 10-1 is the ERB because it's. But then you've got to consider those other stocks involved too, so it's not a perfect ERB. But tell me how to minimize damage.
Well, you've already done that because you bought the XLI.
Well, not completely because I didn't do 10-1. I should have 10-1, and I'd be making money on this. I'd be making money. I'm only 4-1, so I'm slightly weak.
I mean, there's a big red candle to work through in the XLI. It really is open. It looks like we're breaking out above 70.50. So, man, if you could throw out some orders at 71.5, 72, all the way up to that 73.14 high.
You think I'm going to get this in the 70s?
Oh, yeah.
You think Boeing's going to come back into the 70s, 370s today?
Oh no, I'm looking at I was looking at the XLI.
You're looking at XLI. No, I'm not talking XLI,
Boeing
XLI's move along with Boeing. Boeing's the leader. What do you think on the technicals in Boeing? Can I get this back at 380 or is that too hopeful?
Oh yeah.
Joel thinks maybe 380. Maybe
I'm
covering the low three. It's a good report. I don't think it's giving it all back. Dover is a good example of this yesterday. So DOV opened very strong, got ridiculous off the open up in the 86 handle, immediately sold off. I was short Dover. I was able to cover it just above 83. That almost was the low of the day. So on that, you know, mistake that I made that I didn't realize it reported, I was able to minimize the damage pretty good. all the way up to 86 and closes there. I don't know if you're going to get a case like that in Boeing here again where it opens. Maybe you get a few profit takers that come down off the hop, and maybe you buy that initial dip, and then eventually it starts to show strength again. But it's a great report for Boeing, though.
It went to the high. The high was 389.90, so we're $5 off the high. It's just starting to leak here right now. I'll give you 378.50, Dennis. That's mid-range for the entire after-hours and pre-market session, so that's just a totally random number here. But I think, you know, throw something out at 378.5, see if you get it. I think we're going to have a hard time going back up to test that high, though. So that's 378.5, Dennis. That's what I would tell you is a potential target here on the downside. But, man, you know I'm not great. You know I don't love $400 stocks. So you got yourself into
it. I don't like
it
when they're moving against me.
Yeah.
We'll work it out as best we can. Hopefully it can be green at the end of the day, but that's a little bit of damage control there. Wish I would have went a little bit heavier on the XLI. Also, if you want to talk exotic spreads, this is not exotic at all. This is the flat out spread. I've got BABA short, AABA long, and that usually works very well. I trade that almost every single day, BABA versus AABA. If you put the two charts on each other, they're virtually identical. We know Altaba, or however the hell you say it, AABA, is basically just a tracking stock for Alibaba. So BABA's up 1.93%. AABA is currently up 1.88%. So tracking perfectly here today. So that one should work itself out. When I'm in these, guys, and this is another thing, is there's so much slippage in the pre-market. I usually wait until you get through the opening candle to get through the things and then take it off. Take it off when liquidity gets thicker. Don't try to take these things off when it's thin because you could miss one side. So I like it when it's trading slower and I can easily take it off. So if I'm putting these things on overnight, I often take them off when liquidity thickens up. Say you think like 9:45 when the book thickens up, the things calm down a little bit, get some consolidation, come to consolidation station, then I can easily get it on and off.
Yeah, if not, then you might be fighting against yourself. You know, when the because that thing is going to open up with like how big of a spread is something like Bowen. That'll open up with like a $2 spread.
Trying to take off Boeing or even Alibaba in the opening candle. If you're on the right side, it can work out okay. You got extra alpha you extract from, you know, potential, you know, move in the right way. But if you're on the wrong side, you miss one side of it, that's where your spread goes all to hell.
Yeah, and I'll just
I miss one side a lot of times, and it's like I miss one side almost every single day because I'm always paired up. We know I trade market neutral. That's how I day trade. I try to eliminate all the market risk. So I'm usually always trading market neutral, unless I really got a feel. Sometimes I'll go long or short, but for the most part, I'm usually market neutral. And sometimes, you know, you're getting in something and you're trying to short something else. And you're like, oh, I missed the one I was trying to get. And then you got to scramble, try to find something else. So it gets fun at times when you miss one side.
All right. Let's go. What's our next report here? You want to do fast food? Mickey D's?
Let's do the BABA one since Dennis just brought it up. Alibaba reporting this morning here. Q3 adjusted EPS of $1.77 versus $1.67. Sales $17.06 billion versus $17.6 billion. So an EPS beat and a sales miss for the Q3 for BABA, their cloud computing segment, which is, of course, everyone's new favorite business line now, grew 84% on a year-over-year basis. Mixed report for BABA.
It's a nice pop. I did sell half of my Alibaba position in my long-term portfolio the other day. So, and that was just because I feel like it's a little bit toppy here in the 160 area. Let's see what it does today. Can it take out the 160 and a half high?
Yep.
And take those out, because then you could be on the races up to that 168.80 high that we had when we had the blow off top in early December before the big crash. I've just been cautious here with some of these. I mean, I'm on some of these stocks that I bought, you know, in mid-December. You know, you're up substantially. I think I bought Alibaba like $142. So it's a nice move here now. And I don't think we're out of the woods. So it's just a little bit of, you know, positioning for me in my longer term portfolio where, you know, I know we lightened up my Western Digital because I had a 20% move in a day. It just felt overdone. Sometimes I will, you know, do stuff like that, but I trade my long-term portfolio more than I should.
All right, BABA had a quick spike here all the way up to 164.50. But since then, sellers have come down here, and we're in the 160 handle. Yesterday's high, 160.37. I see another high at 160.50. So that's your big area. you know, I would still use that as resistance and then up to the pre-market high. If, in fact, if we're holding 160, you know, throw out orders, you know, 160 and a half, 161, 162, and all the way up to that pre-market high. If you know you're not getting lifted, you're going to have to hit it on the downside. Don't know where to tell you support is really on something like this. You've had a couple declines and buyers have stepped up around 159, but I would give that as very, very, very minor support here. SPU's leaking a little bit.
Yeah, their balances aren't good either.
No?
No, there's a lot. Not that they're bad, but they're no big ones. And you know what? Look at something like IBM. IBM getting hit here right now. 184,000 to sell in IBM. So that's interesting. You would think, you know, logically with Apple up, maybe it's going to be good for IBM. Everybody who's buying IBM this morning is getting, you know, a little slap in the face here. That's significant. 184,000. I haven't seen an IBM selling balance that big in a long time. That's, if that's real, that's probably opening down. So, and it's trading down. The traders are already saying that it's trading down 23 cents in the pre-market. Again, you know, if you're just looking at charts and stuff, it's meaningless on this. At least at the open, if you're trading it, because there's 184,000 to sell. I don't care what the chart looks like. A chart actually looks pretty good. Doesn't matter. There's 184,000 to sell off the hop. It's probably going to go down if that holds. Now, again, this is information. This is for the opening. So, you know, this order isn't these orders aren't executable until 9:30. So things can change. You know, maybe news could come out. Maybe, you know, Fidelity comes out and says, buy them at 200. I'll buy 200,000 of that. And then, you know, it would open flat then. But as of right now, if no buyers come in and that seller remains, IBM is going to open down significantly.
Okay. S&Ps, I just real quick, we didn't talk at the top of the show. You do have some Fed speak today. You do have the end of the month tomorrow, one of the best months since January of 2016. And you have a jobs number on Friday. So there's a lot of fundamental information that, you know, could move the market, you know, based on interest rates. So that's why I'm a little tempered here, you know, on this rally. I can't get real interested until we take out that pre-market high. 2650 is the weekly number here, and that's where we're trading. So up 10 handles, but I think you could have a little bit of a tepid rally here just with all the fundamental information coming out later in the week.
You know what? I agree with this, and you know why? And you know, sometimes it's just about identifying, you know, what's happened before. And remember, do you remember this, Joel? And I'm just going from my memory, so I just correct me if I'm wrong. But when Apple gapped down on the third, when we had the big move down on the third, remember there was a lot of tech stocks that were trading down that day in sympathy? Did we not have a pretty good rally that day, like turn around and start rallying, you know, and actually close fairly strong on a lot of those stocks? Did not, like, you know, I'm just trying to look at the charts myself from that day. But a lot of tech stocks opened weak in sympathy and then shrugged it off. Could we see the opposite thing here happen today, where you have a lot of tech stocks trading strong off the Apple, you know, strength, and then turn around and roll over? Could we see that happen?
That day that you're talking about, Dennis, is actually the day that that Apple made the low of the move at 142, and closed right on that low, but it turned around, and that's when you know, news events, keeping track on the highs and lows, you never even got a shot at that area the next day. There was no retest the next day's
low. Do you remember the tech stock turnaround that day? I do. I'm pretty sure that day we had a lot of techs open very, very weak because Apple poo-pooed the whole market, and a lot of them closed pretty strong. So I'm just saying, Apple's fairly strong here today. Could it do the opposite where you see a lot of these other techs, you know, like it looks like IBM's not going to participate here. Maybe there's going to be some non-tech, maybe there's going to be some tech stocks that don't participate. And that little arb that I talked about off the bat, that would change everything then, because if the tech stocks start to roll over, then you can actually see some of the defensive stocks catch a bit. You got to be able to switch fast, you know, if you're trading all this stuff. So if you're a day trader, you're a long-term swing trader, you go with the flow, you go with your charts. When you're a day trader, or short-term traders, they'll be able to switch your opinion very quickly.
All right, 8:34, Spencer, you want to take a quick break here and bring in our first guest of the day?
Yes, I do. It's been a while since we've spoken to him. Michael Hewson, Chief Market Analyst at CMC Markets from across the pond. He's going to give us a scoop on what happened yesterday with regards to Brexit, what's going to happen, and what it means for us. So we'll be right back in a moment with Michael. And as promised, we are live now with Michael Hewson, Chief Market Analyst at CMC Markets. Michael, how's it going this morning?
Yeah, it's been a fairly quiet morning, actually. The pound has stabilized after last night's sell-off in the wake of the votes in the House of Commons here in London. And I don't think we're really any further forward than we were 24 hours ago, if I'm honest with you.
Okay, so why don't you fill us in there? What exactly happened yesterday?
Well, there were a number of votes, parliamentary votes, on various options that the UK government could consider to try and unlock a solution with regard to the Brexit negotiations with the European Union. Amongst some of these options was an option to extend the Article 50 notification so that the EU and the UK could allow more time to try and come to an agreement that everyone is happy with. That was defeated. There was also an amendment that went through that is non-binding that said that the UK does not want to leave the European Union without a deal, but it didn't really specify what sort of deal they would accept. So that brought us on to the final amendment, which was known as the Brady Amendment, which was an entreaty by the UK MPs for the European Union to reopen the withdrawal agreement with a view to renegotiating the Irish backstop, which an awful lot of people are very unhappy with. The big problem is that no one really knows what they want to replace it with, and the European Union have said that they are not inclined to reopen the agreement. So basically, we're back to where we were 24 hours ago. The only difference is UK MPs have finally agreed on a course of action that the Prime Minister can take back to Brussels and try and negotiate with the European Union. So I suppose it's a sort of progress, but ultimately we are still on course to leave the European Union on the 29th of March with no deal. That is the default position as things stand at the moment.
What about boots on the ground? Like, what about the people? The people voted for this, right? And this is what they wanted. It was, I believe you came out and you were leading that way. Someone has mentioned that. Man, it was so long ago. But talk about, I mean, what is anything, you know, changed? I mean, how is that, you know, this affect them economically, the banks, the mood of the people? I mean, they brought this upon themselves here. So what, you know, boots on the ground there. Tell us how the people feel and how it's affecting the day-to-day actions in the economy.
Well, obviously, with respect to the economy has slowed down, but it hasn't slowed down any more than, say, for example, the economy in the rest of Europe. Some business investment has dried up because ultimately I think businesses do like certainty. And at the moment, no one really knows what is going to happen in 2 or 3 months' time. But I think if you're looking for any evidence that people have changed their minds, they may well have changed their minds on the margins, but ultimately the country is still very, very split in terms of how it views the European Union. And as a result, I'm not convinced that a new referendum, which some people have been asking for, would resolve any of the underlying problems that are afflicting the UK economy. Ultimately, if you look at the unemployment rate, it's still at a 42-year low. Wages are around about a decade high. And to all intents and purposes, the economy is at full employment. But instead of the country being split down party political lines between the Conservative Party and the Labour Party, the country is now split between Leave and Remain. So I think while we've been talking about this for the last nearly 2.5 years, I think we're quite likely to be talking about it for the next 2.5 years, irrespective of what is decided in the next few weeks. And I think it's quite likely that we will get one of two outcomes. We'll either get a no deal Brexit or we will get an extension to Article 50 where talks continue with a view to trying to resolve the problem, because at the moment, I don't think there's any indication whatsoever that MPs here in the United Kingdom will be able to coalesce around one single outcome. And even if they were, it's not likely to be particularly conclusive in terms of the voting pattern. So, you know, a vote to go one way or the other will be close. It won't be decisive. And that pretty much sums up the political mood in the country. People talk about populism, and people talk about one of the reasons why Trump became US president. It's a similar sort of thing over here. There's an awful lot of dissatisfaction with the status quo. So a lot of people in the northern part of the United Kingdom feel that they've been left behind. They haven't had they haven't benefited from the fruits of capitalism as much as they should have. And I think this is one of these things that's going to be replicated and is being replicated across Europe as well. So it's not something that's unique to the UK.
All right, but Michael, I just want to find out from you, what will happen if we get a no-deal Brexit? What then? I'm talking about for the markets. What would that mean?
I think to a certain extent, it'll be disruptive. Certainly, I think in terms of the pound, it'll certainly be disruptive economically, not only here in the United Kingdom, but also in France and Germany. And I think that's why I think, despite all the rhetoric that you're hearing from both sides of the English Channel, there will be some form of accommodation, because ultimately it's in no one's interest, particularly in France, particularly in Germany, for there to be a disruptive Brexit. But if you're asking me where I think this is going to go, I've got to be completely honest with you. I've been following this for the last 2.5 years. I have no idea.
Well, at least you're honest. Michael Houston is the chief market analyst at CMC Markets over in the UK. Michael, thanks so much for the boots on the ground insight, and we'll be in touch as this develops.
Thank you.
All right. 8:43 here. Let's start ripping through some earnings before we get to our guest at 8:50, and let's go straight to AMD, Advanced Micro Devices, reporting after the bell. Yesterday, Q4 EPS, 8 cents, is in line with the estimate. Sales, $1.42 versus $1.45 billion estimate. So a miss on the sales and an in-line EPS for the Q4. The Q1 sales guidance that they gave was light, around $1.25 billion versus $1.48 billion estimate there. And yet, the stock is up.
News algo destroyed on this. You know, people running news algorithms, that basic formula that says, oh, they miss, or, you know, they're only in line and it hits it. That's those market participants, we'll call them, got slaughtered. This thing got initially hit hard on these initial numbers. Traded down to where, Joel?
1801.
Traded down $1.24. So you're talking about a 6% move down. And then they started rallying, and they did not stop rallying it. So if that news algo was scrambling for cover, it scrambled all evening long. There was no coming back from that. And you can see in the after-hours chart, if you look at it, it's hardly even – it's just a little line. It was down there so fast and bounced back so quickly, you had to have an order out there to get it. But it did. It traded down to 1801.
Yeah, that's what I got. I mean, I don't know if that was like
– I saw it. I blinked my eye, and it was back to green. So if you had an order out there, good for you. You would have got filled. But, wow, you know, and then obviously rewarded. And so this is the exact same thing as Apple. The report wasn't great, but you know what? Expectations were just lower. Got hit on the NVIDIA stuff before it, and people wanted to buy it. So squeeze the hell out of them.
I gave a number last night, and it's kind of, you know, I like to do a weekly number in a stock just to kind of keep my bearings, whether, you know, be bullish or bearish on it. And AMD, my weekly number was 2117. Now you got excited on what day was that? On Friday, they took it to 2203. 2101 was your high one time last week, and also on Tuesday. Your pre-market high is 2139. So I would just keep an eye, you know, 21 even, 2139. I mean, you really got to get through that pre-market high, to get more momentum. Friday's high, 2203.
Actually,
big pop. Do you do now? Like, what do you do? So, you know, you're buying a stock on a weak report. It gets the short squeeze here. Anybody leaning, you know, to the short side thinking, oh, it's going to pull an NVIDIA. It kind of did. I mean, they kind of disappointed. I mean, it wasn't as bad as NVIDIA, but it wasn't great. And now it's straight up in your face. So here's a situation where it goes opposite to really the news. And Apple, almost the same thing. I mean, expectations, again, were all baked in. It was too low. It's exactly what Farhi Hamzy was saying, you know, on our show last week. Expectations on Apple were just too low. Expectations AMD were too low. It met those, you know, lower sentiment expectations and is now trading up substantially here. Does it follow through? Can it follow through on a 9% move here on, you know, what were really not that great of results? Or, you know, does it give it back? I don't know. You know, you don't often see stocks rallying on disappointing results, but that's kind of what we're seeing here.
Yeah, and, you know, if you got caught here, that move up to 22, breaking out, now you're seeing it back in 21. I think it's just going to reset here. And we'll hold 21 here, and I know we're just trading at 21.02. You know, if you're looking for that big continuation move, let's just see if it can hold 21. I want to give it down to 20.50 and then see what happens at the pre-market high. But big volume trading, and bulls and bears seem like going to be battling it out here at 21.
Continue, Mr. Israel.
Yeah, there's so many to get to. And if you have any specifics in the chat you'd like us to hit, let us know.
Do those big guns. Do those Dow components.
All right, let's go to AT&T then. That's a Dow component. AT&T reporting earnings this morning. Q4 EPS, 86 cents, is in line with the estimate. Sales missed, $48 billion versus $48.47. Slight miss on that number. What do they say as far as guidance are concerned? They didn't give too much guidance, but so an inline EPS and a sales miss for the quarter in AT&T.
Well, Verizon disappointed yesterday. They refused to sell AT&T off on the disappointing Verizon results. That is not the case here today. They're hitting AT&T on its results there. So followed Verizon perfectly there, really. Verizon just had the day before move. Stocks right now down back under $30. I'll say the same thing. I said on Verizon yesterday, I didn't think they were going to slaughter it. You know, it was down in the 53, low 53s. And we're like, probably finds buyers in the 52s or 53s because it's got a nice dividend. At a certain point in time, AT&T is probably the same thing. I mean, yeah, it's back under 30, 29.82, the low from the 10th. Let's see what it does there. Does that have the potential to bounce? Yeah, I wouldn't be selling AT&T in the hole because a lot of guys are and market participants are in this for the dividend. So... I'm not selling it down here, but I don't know if I'm necessarily buying it either.
Yeah, I'm kind of in a little bit of a pickle here. I was bearish, did that super long consolidation, and I knew it was, look at that, 11, 12 days within a trading range, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was prepared for a move, of course. I just put on the puts. The 31 puts yesterday.
That's
and then, as a hedge, I just, you know, I ended up buying a few of the 30 calls as well. I'm more slated to the put side here. So I'm going to have to see if I'm going to have to try and wiggle out of it or, you know, just dump the one side. What I'll be looking for is it to take out the pre-market low of 29.70. The longer it does to take that, the more I think I'll just kind of just, take the profit on the put and hopefully get a pop up on the call here. But long consolidation period, and it looks like we've rolled it to the downside. And it got a lot of air in this one, but I'm comfortable to see the open in this one because a lot of times that, you know, that nickel, dime, you know, 10 cents from the open be a really good indication. So that's what I'm looking for in AT&T. And we got a whopping full, oh boy, we got a big crowd in here, Dennis. You think it's for our next guest coming up, Michael Olson?
Let's go grab Michael Olson, Managing Director, Senior Research Analyst at Piper Jaffray, breaking down the Apple report. So we'll be right back in a moment with Mike. All right, and as promised, here's Mike Olson, Managing Director, Senior Research Analyst at Piper Jaffray. Mike, before we get to the important things, you're in Minnesota. We're in Michigan. What is the temperature where you are right now?
Yep, I just pulled up my iPhone, and it is saying negative 28. Last night when I was driving home after the Apple earnings, they were saying that it was negative 25 with a negative 52 wind chill. So it's pretty nasty. Just for the fun of it, I walked outside to my ramp where I parked my car, and last night just to feel it, and it was painful. That's the only way to describe it, is painful.
Wow. All right. So what is going to, what's more today? Will the temperature be below zero, greater than Apple will be up, or what? Because we're trying to understand this Apple report. And my only question really is the consensus from the analysts and what we've discussed this morning on the show really seems to be, based on the trading this morning, is that the bad news is in. And if that's the case, then why? That's all I want to know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on it there. It's just, you know, better than feared is kind of the summary of it, in the sense that everyone knew essentially what had happened for the December quarter, given they had pre-released, and so there wasn't much mystery around that. It's more just related to the March quarter guidance, and it was slightly below consensus, but it kind of suggests the worst is behind us as far as kind of the worsening year-over-year revenue declines, because the outlook suggests sales will fall about 5% year-over-year, similar to what we saw in December. And then I would guess there's likely some degree of conservatism in the guide, considering management's probably looking to really ensure that they don't miss twice in a row. So in the end, maybe there's a high likelihood that year-over-year revenue decline ends up slightly better in March than what we saw in December, given that level of conservatism that's likely baked in.
We're on the line with Mike Olson, Managing Director and Senior Research Analyst at Piper Jaffray. What was the upside surprise in the report to you? Something that, you know, you thought would maybe a little underperformance, but came in better than expected?
Well, one thing is we had put kind of a dummy number in our model for what services gross margin would look like. And that number that we had in the model was 60%. So when it came in at 63%, that was better. And also the increase on a year-over-year basis, services gross margin going up 500 basis points from 58% last year to last December quarter, I should say, to 63% this December quarter. So I think the year-over-year increase and just the level of services gross margin was probably the bright point for us.
And how about on the flip side here, something you were a little disappointed about?
Well, even with the reduction in overall revenue guidance for the December quarter and knowing approximately where that was going to come in, the iPhone revenue number still came in slightly below consensus. So it really did just show, obviously significant weakness, which we already knew, but it was even to some degree slightly more weak than we had expected.
And moving forward here, it seems like they're just biding time here. I mean, they've kind of come to the realization that, you know, iPhones, you know, I mean, only the recycle, you know, the replacement cycle can only do so much. And they're really expanding, you know, the services. I think the wearables numbers look good. I mean, you think that, you know, you think they can keep it together for 2019, just sit tight with the stock, and then maybe 2020 will be a better year for Apple?
Yeah, that's kind of our expectation, is that it's a year of potentially limited catalysts in 2019, and no one's expecting anything from the upcoming slate of iPhones in, you know, September, October, November. So I think it's more a function of that. That's a good way to describe it, is just kind of keeping the train on the tracks for 2019, and then investors are going to start to focus on 2020 and the potential for 5G iPhones, and that'll be kind of the next anticipation trade going into that cycle. So this year's about just stabilizing the business and services growth, and next year, and probably really going into late this year, an increasing focus on the 5G iPhone potential in 2020.
Mike, in so far as you can tell, how is Apple positioned when it comes to 5G?
I think they're a little behind, as is often the case. You know, they seem to be generally a fast follower with a lot of this technology. I mean, it's a company that prides itself on innovation, but I also think that, you know, if you just look at a lot of the handsets that are being made internationally, often Apple's following what they're doing. And I think in this case, that's to some degree self-inflicted, in the sense that they want to ensure that the 5G network is built out to a degree that's capable to support their devices, so that they can provide a good customer experience when they do provide 5G hardware.
And what about the services? We've been talking for the last few years, they need to develop another segment as another driver of the company. Services seems to have been the one that Wall Street has keyed in on. Was there anything from what they said about services that has you particularly concerned or excited?
Nothing really on the concern front, I would say. It kind of was generally as expected. You know, they provided some additional metrics around getting to, you know, 500 million or more than 500 million subscribers for their various, you know, services, and that being accomplished sometime by fiscal 20. So they're certainly expecting, you know, significant continued growth from the 330 million or so subscriptions that they have today. And that sounded on the call that that was the 500 million number is a conservative number, because that actually anticipates a slowdown in what the services subscriber growth has been over the last couple of years. So I think that number is probably generally pretty conservative, and should be well north of that as we get towards the end of fiscal 20.
Speaking of the call, I'm wondering if you noticed a change in tone at all.
Not really. I think, you know, I felt they did a good job of just hitting it right up front that, you know, they were disappointed with the December quarter results, and didn't shy away from talking about how they had pre-released and, you know, this was abnormal for them, and things like that. And I think it just gets back to they called it out as being something that's very abnormal, and that they really pride themselves on ability to have some degree of visibility into their numbers. And I think that's another sign, as I mentioned earlier, that, you know, they likely have built in some degree of conservatism into the numbers, because if they missed again for the March quarter, that would be a significant issue, not only just for the view of investors of the fundamentals of the business, but also credibility of the management team.
Just speaking to the credibility of the management team and the upper management, and you don't have to comment on this if you don't want to here, but, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, Mr. Cook, there's things that he could be doing to run the company better, you know, besides the buybacks and the dividend and stuff. I mean, you know, everyone was looking for it to fall flat again. Just give us your assessment of the upper level management.
Well, I think it's just a style that has proven to be maybe kind of steady Eddie would be the right way to put it. In other words, you know, an attempt to maintain, you know, an amazing business that's been built primarily around the iPhone without rocking the boat too much through, you know, investing in areas that could end up having, you know, low or no ROI. And at some point, you know, that can catch up to you if you wake up one day and there's you know, limited innovative new categories of growth for the company. So I think that's, you know, an area where the company has maybe erred a little bit too much on the side of safety and kind of, again, you know, just keeping things on the straight and narrow. But you know, that's certainly a debate that I think we could have with a lot of different companies.
Mike Olson, senior research analyst at Piper Jaffray. Mike, before I let you go, rating and price target.
Yep, our rating's overweight, and we have $187 price target.
All right, stay warm out there, Mike. Thanks for coming on with us, and maybe don't go outside today.
Yep. All right. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. 9 a.m., guys. That's going to do it for our show. Any final thoughts, Matthew?
Just saying, balances. I can give you a few quick ones. We already talked about IBM, 175,000 in sales, down 40 cents here now. So some traders obviously selling on that. Bristol Myers, 102,000 to buy. That's interesting. It's a big buy and balance on a day where some of the other pharmaceuticals, at least the biotechs, are weak. Just trying to run through. Small sell and bounce. Square, big buy and bounce, 215,000 to buy in Square. So it's going to get a little bounce back morning here, it looks like. That's pretty much it of notables.
Yeah, I'll just give the general levels. The SPOOs were up 12. Really looking, if you want more upside, we got to take out that pre-market high, 55 and a quarter. 63 and a half was your high from Monday. Coming back on the downside, you got mid-range at 45.75. That could be a target. And if we get in the lower 40 handle, double close at 26.42. So, Spencer, wrap things up in our preview Thursday show.
Thursday show, we're going to be joined by James Putra, Director of Product Strategy and Innovation at TradeStation. And still, obviously, a lot of earnings on the docket for tomorrow. This is the biggest week, really. So it'll be another earnings dominated show tomorrow. If you missed any part of today's show, though, catch our podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play, or just rewatch us on YouTube. Thanks to both of our guests today, Mike Olson and Michael Hewson. Please remember, all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Hope everyone has a good day, and we'll see you again on Thursday.